By the time Lenny Moore entered the NFL in 1956, pass-catching running backs were few and far between. But by the time he finished his 12-year career, he had broken the mold. Lenny totaled more than 12,000 all-purpose yards and remains the only player in the history of the game with at least 40 rushing touchdowns and 40 receiving touchdowns while enduring the racial strife of that era. His football life ended in Canton with a Hall of Fame induction in 1975. It came to prominence more than two decades earlier in State College, Pennsylvania. Lenny, the 1954 Penn State team that you were a part of was instrumental in making the school nationally recognized. Your head coach was Rip Engel, and one of his assistants was Joe Paterno. How did those two coaches help you in becoming a great player at Penn State?
Well, they see that evidently I had something to offer. You know, we don't know. We have to take their leadership and go from there, hoping that we have what it takes. And they worked with me, both, and man, God bless them.
Did you get any sense that Joe Paterno would be was a future head coach in the making? I mean, not like, you know, 30 plus years head coach, but like he had the material of being a future head coach?
Sure. In fact, all of those assistants, you know, were good. You know, like Rip Engel was a great leader. He was something else. Once he had the confidence in us, you know, that he was just letting us know. You know, what did we know? I mean, we know that we may have some talent, but we don't know exactly what to do with it until they show us how to expose it, you know, mm-hmm. and how we can believe in ourselves that we're good enough, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty of what Rip Engel and Joe Paterno was all about.
As the number 9 pick in the 1956 NFL draft, you were selected by the Baltimore Colts, and 2 years later would be involved in the famous 1958 NFL championship game against the Giants. A lot of people forget you delivered the block that helped Alan Ameche get into the end zone for the winning score. But I'm interested, did you have any idea of that game's importance in its immediate aftermath?
Well, you never know at that particular point. You know, I guess the thing that we were just happy about was that we were the world champions. We were the best. And at that particular time, but we didn't know that it was, you know, going to really be that important because it was a sudden death overtime.
Yep, that was the first of its kind.
The first one of its kind. And, you know, that was lessons to be learned for other clubs, just in case that, hey, you got to keep doing it, and this is what it's about. Believe in each other and believe in your coaches. Coaches believed in their players. And let us know that we could do it, and we did it.
And you did it again the next year in 1959.
We sure did.
Yeah.
We sure did.
And the quarterback of that Colts offense was the great Johnny Unitas. Was there a time in which you and your teammates realized Unitas was not just a great quarterback, but was one that could thrive in the pressure situations?
Well, you know, he was the leader. He took over. And that had us to build the confidence in him because he said, hey, you can do this, you can do that, and we'll do it together. And that kind of thing, you know. when the coaches would send in plays and things of that nature, if John felt that that play wasn't going to work, he would call it at that time. And if the coach told him, John, how come you didn't call the play that I sent? He said, because I didn't think it would work. So he was pretty much, you know, one who knew what we could do or felt, you know, had the confidence in us that we could get it done, even though the coach had sent something in. He didn't call it maybe right at that time because he felt like he didn't think it would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a field general in every sense of the word.
He was a complete field general. He was in charge. If any of the linemen said, hey, John, don't call anything in my thing, you know, I'm something. He said, man, if you can't do it, get the hell out of here. You know, we'll put somebody else in. And that kind of thing. You know, he was a strong leader. Don't tell me you can't do it when you're in here, and we all know that it's a possibility you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that kind of thing. So he was a good quarterback, a strong quarterback. And hey, what do you have, man? What can you do? And I tell him, I said, hey, John, I can do a slant in. I can do a slant in takeoff. I can do pretty much whatever you want, you know, whatever the play calls for. I think I can do it. Okay. And maybe he wouldn't call it right then. He'd call it when he thought it was ready. Is it still there? You know, he'd holler in the huddle. I said, oh, yeah, whenever you're ready, my man. And, you know. That's the way it went. And Raymond Berry, in particular, was like a coach in the huddle. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that, he was on top of everything. He was just like a coach on the, right in the huddle. And, you know, he would look at me and said, Lenny, I'm going to tell John we need more of you in our offense, you know. Or if John wasn't calling certain plays that maybe had me do certain things, you know.
Yeah.
He would tell John, you know, what up, hey, man, we need to use Lenny maybe a little bit more. Or whatever, you know. I found that out because he called me off to the side. He said, Lenny, he says, I'll give you a tip. He said, I was watching the film. And in watching the films, I've noticed that when you make your sharp cuts, you know, if you're going to run a pass pattern, try not to cut on your inside foot. Try to make your sharps, your cuts sharp by cutting on your outside foot. So that way that you can maintain your balance and then your shoulder doesn't kind of get in the way to kind of half block you from being able to turn your body in a certain direction to adjust for the pass when it comes. He said, but you got to work at it to make it become a part of you. And I understood what he was saying because I didn't know what foot I was cutting on. Yeah, I never paid any attention whether I cut on my inside foot or my outside foot. I knew I cut it 10 yards or 12 yards or 15 yards to make my break. But Raymond was telling me that the sharper you make your cut, the better you're able to maneuver your body in order to make the adjustment to catch the pass. And once I started doing it, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm. And Raymond Berry was, as you said, a coach on the field and would eventually be a head coach of the New England Patriots?
No question.
Yeah.
No question. Because those guys, you know, guys like Raymond and like so, guys who go on into other positions, light coaching, they watch films, and they know exactly what's going on. Not everybody, you know, watches films to that degree. Mm-hmm. Every opportunity that they got, man, they're watching films. And I understand the, you know, the gist of it. That way you get to know the inside and the outsides of it.
Well, you did a very good job of listening and paying attention to the films, because you gained more than 12,000 all-purpose yards at flanker and running back from 1956 through 1967. But I want to touch on the 1964 season, a year in which you were named MVP and Comeback Player of the Year following two injury-riddled seasons in 62 and 63, and at one point I believe you lost your starting job. Looking back on a personal note, is that 64 season one that is most satisfying to you?
Well, very much so, because it showed me, you know, when I really dedicated myself, because I even heard that through the possibilities that hey, I may be even traded, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, no, man, boy, I'm a Baltimore Colt. You know, I don't want to go anywhere else, and what's the problem? So if this is what it is, I dedicated my intensity and thanking God for helping me, you know, with the ability to do it. And I went after it with no holds barred. Because I wanted to show everybody that I still have it, that I have what it takes, that I have the capabilities to do it. And it wasn't because I slacked off, because, you know, sometimes you don't know. You don't know sometime when you're not doing maybe what you're even capable of doing. But, you know, when you really get at it, like with a guy like Raymond and folks like that, you know, encouraging you and telling you, you know. So if you're born with natural ability, some have a little bit more than others. But that has to be brought out, that you have to know that you either have these abilities to be able to improve oneself. And then when your guys come to you and tell you, you know, that, hey, man, you can do this, you can do that, you know, mm-hmm. just keep doing what you're doing, you know, and like so. That ends through prayer and, you know, belief in God. I used to carry a little miniature Bible in my right thigh pad. And I'd always touch it, you know, Lord, help me, guide me, lead me, teach me, show me, and like so, you know, mm-hmm. and trusting in God with all your heart and leaning not to your own understanding. You acknowledge him in all your ways. He'll direct thy path.
Keep your eye on number 24, Lenny Moore, who is flanked to the right here. Unitas is looking for Raymond Berry out to the left, but suddenly he spots Moore cutting for the center of the field. Johnny's pass is perfectly placed, and Lenny is already behind Lyndon Crowe. Nobody is going to catch Moore now, and he lopes to a 60-yard touchdown. The Colts take a quick 7-0 lead over New York.
We'll get back to the show in a moment, but first I'd like to talk to you about Audible. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. For you, the listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/profilesinsports. Again, that's audibletrial.com/profilesinsports, all one word, for your free audiobook today. Add three more seasons after 64 before retiring. During the 50s and 60s, being an African-American athlete during that time in which you played certainly had its obstacles, that's putting it lightly. If you could talk about how the racial tensions varied from the football field to the locker room to the community in Baltimore.
Good question. We could talk about that for years.
I got a long time.
Well, it's the bottom line was knowing God. When you know God and trust in the Lord with all your heart, He'll show you the things. If you don't trust God, there are some things that you might do that might be unexplainable, and even you may not even be able to explain it as to why you did what you did or why you do what you do. That's why it's vitally important to try to understand who are you, what are you, why are you, where are you? And if you can answer those questions, then you have a better understanding of who is Lenny Moore, what is Lenny Moore all about, why is Lenny Moore A, B, and C. So when things happen, and they happen, how do you deal with it? Sometimes you may not have the wisdom that will give you the knowledge to help you create understanding before you do certain situations and why you do certain situations. Just like in racial problems, when racial issues and problems and like that come up, I know how I feel and how I felt, you know, almost like what you call left out or not important. Or why am I the forgotten person? Why am I not included in the mass? Why can't I go in this restaurant and sit down and eat? Why can't I check into this hotel or motel where they don't have me or won't serve me? And those kind of issues and things that you encounter in being what race you are. Why is that? How do you handle that? Well, it's just a question of how do you deal with being left out? Well, you know, just like I said before, you have to try to understand the wisdom, which will help you get the knowledge as to why you're doing it, to try to help you to understand. And the understanding comes as well if they say that I cannot do this because I am who I am. I have to understand that. But why? To what point am I rejected and not accepted? And it can be a damaging blow. And I felt those blows off and on. And there's only one way to overcome that. And there was only one way for me to overcome that. I had to talk to the Master, talking about God. I had to talk to the Master and try to understand the Master's plan. Even though society and all the other things already had their things already together, that they were going to reject me or not accept me in certain situations, how was I going to handle? How was I going to deal with it? That's where I had to understand the depth of it. Other than that, you know, why am I less than? Why am I treated less than? Why can't I, you know, be accepted as everybody else is accepted? If your skin color is different. Mm-hmm. And that's a battle. That's tough. That's as deep as it gets in reference to try to finding out who are you? Why are you? Where are you? What is all this about? And those unanswered questions pop up every now and then. And it's not a thing that it's a forgotten thing. It's still there, and it still happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a question that, it's like God says, love one another as I love you. And that's the depth of how deep one has to go in order to overcome any of those negatives that happen that treats one less than another simply because of his color.
Well, that's a fantastic message to deliver. And certainly it's something that still resonates today. And,
sure.
Yeah, and I know that, and I read this, in regards to dealing with such racial tension, you were mentored greatly by fellow Hall of Famer Ollie Mattson.
No question. In fact, I had to go to those before me. And I did that all the way down the line. You know, of the guys who were before me. The hell they had to go through was just complete isolation. They were isolated. You know, I was isolated off and on. Theirs was just a complete blackout. You know, yeah. And God, how did they handle it? You know, for me to handle what I'm handling is tough, but they were just completely blocked out, you know, the further back you go. And that's the further back I went because I made it a point to talk to those folks, you know, before me, you know, and had a chance, you know, to get with them, like the great Jackie Robinson. I had a chance to meet with Jackie and sit down and chat with him because he was the only one, you know, with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I said, Jackie, I said, let me ask you a question, man. I said, you were the only one. I said, how did you do it? How did you handle, man, these racial issues, man? He said, Lenny, I'm going to be very honest with you. used Jackie's words to me. He said, I honestly don't know. That's what Jackie told me point blank. He said, I know I had to go through it, to get through it, as best I could. But I don't know. It was nothing but just God overseeing him.
Mm-hmm.
Which was probably a matter that wasn't brought to the surface. But I know in my dealings, I had to go to the master, which is God, and the master's plan, which is God, to help me get through a lot of the issues that I had to go through without completely losing my cool, so to speak, and do things that I probably could have been sorry for later down the line. I had a lot of talking to the master and the master's plan to help me get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, you had issues that happened off and on internally, and you had to work yourself through it, so it didn't take away from what the real situation is that you're involved in. Because it can rob you, man. It can take from you. So I had to keep my mind on spearheading ahead with God's leadership to guide me in many instances. And by talking with folks like Jackie Robinson. See, sometimes you don't say anything, man. Sometimes you feel like you want to cuss somebody out, you know, because of what they called you, you know. But you just have to sometimes take things. And unfortunately, this is the way it is. And prayerfully, hopefully, that it'll get better. That we learn to love one another as God loves us.
Yeah, I certainly hope it gets better. You hear a lot still about it, whether it's in regards to the NFL or sports or just the outside world.
Right.
On a lighter note, I want to touch on one final thing and one final question for you, Lenny, and that's in regards to the relationship between Baltimore, the city, and its football team, and you've lived in the area for so long.
Yeah.
And in regards to the Colts especially, that was a unique relationship between the Baltimore Colts and the city of Baltimore. Something we...
Without question.
Yeah, we won't see that again, just considering the amount of money that's made by the players. But certainly there's a great relationship between the fans in Baltimore and the Ravens now. But just from your perspective... talk about how that relationship was, how strong that bond was between the city of Baltimore and the Baltimore Colts.
It was a growing thing, and I have to credit a lot to the ownership of the team. Carol Rosenblum was a great human being. Carol Rosenblum made it a point that the Baltimore Colt team was a united team. And anyone that didn't have any kind of situation that wanted to be a part of that unity can go. And we're not going to tolerate any internship of race. We are all one together. We are Baltimore Colts. We are one together, and we work together you want to do that, let us know. You can go somewhere else. And that's the blanket that was shown from the ownership on down through. Sure, there were little sideline incidences and things that happened, but everything sometimes is not a blanket clean. But from the ownership down, he set the stage. And that was a beautiful piece that we all could kind of reach and grab a hold of and be truthful one to another. And that's the way it was with Carol Rosenblum. The great man on down through the coaches that we had, Weeb Eubank and Don Shula, you know, that I had the opportunity to play with and against. But at least they know that race was a part of some of the issues. They made it a point that they didn't turn their back on it. And that was a welcoming situation. On into, I guess, the present is more so that many positions and many situations throughout the whole National Football League has completely changed. There were certain positions that were taboo positions, like quarterback, for instance, because it's supposed to be a thinking man's position. And so no body of skin color, particularly black, could be a quarterback in the NFL, but that changed, and it's continuing to change, slow but sure, and the same with other different positions, and but it was always put with a criticism of black being back, white being right, kind of situation to govern. Who's where, what, and why. And that's been pretty much the whole thing. And slowly but surely, it's changed. All the way around. It's been changing consistently. Not to its full degree, because there are still those issues prevalent, but less and less over the years.
Well, Lenny, this was a tremendous honor getting to talk to you. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your time, and all the best to you.
Been nice talking with you. Thank you.
Be sure to download and listen to all episodes of Profiles in Sports on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and most other places you listen to podcasts. You can also follow the show via profilesinsports.com or our Facebook page. And you can follow yours truly, Brian Wright, on Twitter, at BrianWright86.